Talk given Sunday, 24th September, 1972. In some ways, we are all quite young. I don't mean young in the sense that we are full of the zest of life. May we always remain young that way, especially where the mind is concerned. But we are young in the sense of being not quite mature. We are really immature. It's only the exceptional people in the world who reach maturity in the full human sense of the word. What I have specially in mind in using this word immature is just this. We are all concerned with becoming free of our pains and our problems. Now, wherein does the immaturity of this concern lie? Surely is it not natural that if a living person is in pain, physical and or mental, and that if he have problems, he should not want to be free of them? Of course, it's perfectly natural to be want to be free of the pains and the problems. But do we, individual people all over the world, ever consider whether what we call our pain or problem is just our pain or problem? You see, the attitude and the approach is almost entirely self-centered. It's my pain I want to get rid of. Isn't there something truer than that, greater than that? What about my neighbor's pain? The pain of my society, the problems of the country, of the whole world. Does pain or a problem exist only in the atomistic sense? Or does it exist in the atomistic sense, certainly, because it manifests through individual people? Or does it exist also in the field sense? Something, a field which is at least as large as the whole world, as far as our planet is concerned. Is not all the world suffering? Full of problems. And is not your problem and my problem interconnected through the fact of our being interconnected inescapably, inextricably through the psyche? So if that is the case, if we become concerned only with our own pain or problem, there is no chance of dealing with it in the right way. Absolutely not. Take an instance like a national disaster, as we call it. Say a mighty earthquake takes place. There's no question of just your pain or my pain. It's everybody's. But even in the face of such a situation, individuals do get concerned, most concerned, with their own particular disaster. My house went down before my eyes, my wife or child was engulfed in it. Now you see what I'm getting at. This immaturity of the mind, in that it is unawake to the wholeness. And the truth of our life is the total reality, not just an abstracted bit of it, which is my bit. The abstracted bit has little meaning, significance, value, or place apart from its integral setting in the totality. See, this is something which needs very deep consideration all through our life. We tend to abstract ourselves out of the totality, to separate ourselves. And surely, is not this separativeness right at the root of all human problems? Consider how we actually live, how we unconsciously think of ourselves as just ourselves. I am John Smith, or I am Mary Brown. That is me, that is myself. The living organism which goes by one's name is indeed precisely that living organism and not another living organism. That organism precisely is John or Mary or whoever it is. Perfectly true. But is that the whole truth? And what happens as a consequence of not seeing any further than one's own nose? There is set up all through life this basic duality of self and not self. Now this basic duality lies at the very root of our unease in every way. It is not confined to certain aspects of our life. It affects the whole of our life, through and through. This mode of awareness of myself as the self, and everything else as the not-self. This is our real affliction, if you like. the prolific parent of all our conflicts, confusions, misery, frustrations, and so on. I am discriminatively conscious only. I am not wholly aware, in the pure sense of the term, of the totality, of which what I commonly call I, and it is a convenient way of talking of myself, am an integral portion. Integral, not separate. Integral means built into, in actual fact, so completely and utterly that any element of exclusiveness, of separativeness, immediately produces a diseased state, both physically and mentally. We may agree with this intellectually, simply because we are, just to put it at a simple level, we are ordinary, educated, cultured people. We'll agree with it intellectually. But this intellectual agreement is a surface agreement. It is not a powerful enough force to affect the actual living process of our lives from moment to moment. We actually live contradicting that intellectual agreement. This is our trouble. You may ask, well, how is it that if I see it intellectually so clearly, why can't I live it? It's a very good question. There are very powerful unconscious forces at work. Most powerful of all, the fact that this physical body, this organism, is descended from a primordial ancestor who had no awareness of totality. The animal world, the plant world, our primordial ancestors, whoever they were, right at the very beginning of our evolution, they lived in tune with the whole as integral parts and portions, unconsciously. Now, this is the important point. They just naturally lived like that. They couldn't help it. If something threatened their physical well-being and preservation of their own self, then there arose a force, an energy in them, which immediately attempted to ward off that which threatened their own existence and to fight against it. There was war. There was conflict, one animal against another. It was as simple as that. Now, we are descended from some primordial ancestor who was like that. And this, all the conditioned reflexes and instincts and so forth, as we call it, the instinct for self-preservation and the preservation of the species and all that that entails, all that exists in the tens of billions of cells that compose our body. The cell itself is like that, to start with. Its electrochemistry works just that way. That's how it has this pleasure-pain mechanism, which says, beware, something is coming to hurt you, to destroy you. Or says, oh, this is all right. I can eat it, I can play with it, and so forth. So, this unconscious force is there in us, which more than counteracts the little awakening that we have had from within in terms of consciousness of the total reality, in which we are integrated. So you see, we as a human race, we may have been on the globe 3-4 million years, goodness knows how long, but howsoever long it has been, and right up till now, we function in terms of this discriminative consciousness. Myself and the not-self. And we have to be extremely sensitive to this. I'm very vividly conscious of myself. Oh yes, this, my body, my feelings, my ideas, my moods, and so forth. But am I anywhere near so vividly conscious of the physical state, the feelings, the moods of the person who is nearest to me, perhaps even dearest to me? Am I so vividly conscious? And if not, why not? Isn't it curious? That sensitivity has not really come out. It has not grown. In other words, in one of the most important aspects of my being and life, I am immature. I am mature in self-centeredness, in selfishness. I am immature in terms of totality. Now, why is this so very important for us human beings? It is only through us human beings that this new and marvelous, this unbelievably wonderful facet of human existence, of the earth's whole life, I mean, not merely human existence, this wonderful facet of the earth's whole life is emerging. Namely, coming to self consciousness. We have gone into this in previous meetings too. The earth put forth the plant world, life begins. The animal world, there is mind, there is feeling, there is psyche, psychical phenomena, and all the rest of it. And in man, this light that shines in the darkness begins to glow. It is in man that this happens. And this light that shines in the darkness in each and every one of us, its great significance is that it is the whole world which is coming to self-consciousness through each human being. Now, we the human beings, who are the vehicles, the instruments of this marvelous and miraculous thing, really, when you come to look at all its consequences and its implications and so forth. We human beings are yet so young, so immature, that we are aware of self only in its most limited terms. I, separate from you. And this is where the tragedy comes. When my self-consciousness is free of its isolativeness, then the spiritual I is completely open. The mind and the heart of man are a perfect harmony. of wisdom and love. And they are in harmony with the body, and therefore of action. So we get wisdom, love, and action in a perfect and a marvelous harmony together. In the true human, the happy creator, the one in whom all evil-mindedness, all ill states of mind are no more. The mind is really healthy, whole, mature. Now, when that is the case, what is the meaning of my problem or my pain? You see how utterly different it becomes. Consider for a moment how the people composing a society experience their problems and attempt to solve them. Our problems, as we say, are different problems. If I'm a dustman, if I'm a duke, if I'm a civil servant, if I'm a pianist, if I'm whatever it is, a housewife, a cook, or if I'm a thief, or an assassin, or a drunkard, I have my particular problems, don't I? And I seek to solve them, or wish that they could be solved, in the way that I like, that I want them to be solved. In other words, my particular desires are constantly interplaying and limiting, constricting the whole situation. The situation is one of confusion, disorder, misery. So I never see the actual forces at work. My dualistic consciousness, my particular limited desires, and all the rest of it. I just don't see that. So that I myself remain continuously in a state of conflict. And my state of conflict, interacting with the other fellow's state of conflict, which is of a different nature, because I am a philanthropist and he is a pianist and this fellow is an assassin. So all our situations are entirely different, aren't they? And the mess is a truly unholy mess. The whole of the psychical world in which we live is in this kind of mess. Let's make no mistake about it. All these conflicting energies, these energies which cannot be related to each other, I'm talking of all these ill energies, these evil energies. They cannot be related. You can't make a harmony of them. The desires of the immature can never be really satisfied. And if they can be satisfied sometimes, somewhere, in a limited way, they are productive of sorrow. Your great oil magnate or whoever he is, your world conqueror, etc., etc., what is it all? Cruelty, oppression, misery, everywhere. That is all. Ego lust, vanity lust, love lust, pleasure lust of all the senses and so forth, all these forces at play. Do you wonder that the Tibetans called this world, Mjölba. I don't know whether I'm pronouncing the word correctly. I doubt if I am, but still. Meaning, our good English word which we know so well, hell. That is what this world is like. That is to say, in our psychical life, physically, it is not quite like that, for the very simple reason that if the physical world were also like that, we just couldn't exist at all. We'd be wiped out in any case. The whole world might blow up. But this is what we are like. This is how our problems function inside us as separate individuals and make a complete mess of everything. Now, what is the meaning of the word problem? A situation arises, and I find that I'm unequal to it. I can't cope with it. I don't know what to do about it. And why don't I know what to do about it? Because I haven't got the know-how. Because I am not able to understand what has become complicated and gone wrong. So, essentially, a problem means that which I have not understood. My mind is in a state of confusion. Therefore, I have a problem. And all over the world, we have this state of mind. The mind that is unable to understand, to see the fact as the fact in its fullness. And what lies at the root of not being able to see the fact as the fact? Fundamentally, this root of conflict, self and not self, this isolative self-consciousness, this separative object consciousness, aware only of limited and finite particulars and unconscious of the right and actual relationships which subsist between them. So now, we have tried to see the heart of the matter and also the reason why, although we may give intellectual assent to the heart of the matter, we are unable to live it. This great unconscious force due to our natural evolution, which is still so powerful that it overrides our intellect trying to get at this light that shines in the darkness within us. Now, the intellect by itself will never be able to do the needful. The cold perceiving intellect, which is indispensable, remember, needs the cooperation of sensitivity, this action of that part of the mind which is usually termed the heart in all religious and mystical writings. The heart, hridaya, means also the physical heart, true enough. But in this context of the religious life and understanding the truth of things, hridaya means that innermost essence of mind. And this is a thing of sensitivity, intense sensitivity. The intellect is the formalizer, the verbalizer afterwards, to give it shape, structure it. But to get at the real pulsating energy, this heart of the mind is the thing. It means sensitivity, this intense sensitivity. We need both of them at work. Now, when both of them work in harmony, then this extraordinary thing happens, that this isolativeness, where our relationship with the world as a whole is concerned, and our separativeness, insofar as the relationship of one object to another or one person to another is concerned, that vanishes. Then one sees and feels in terms of the whole. Now there is the possibility of harmony, of the mind being clear, no longer in the conflicting, disharmonious state, and therefore no longer incapable of understanding. Because when the eye, E-Y-E-I, sees, when the ear hears, when the hand touches with love, there is understanding. This is the great point about it. But you see what has happened to us. Our answer to our problem, we can look at it as our personal individual problem or as the problem of all society or the world problem. The answer to our problem, the healing balm for our pain and misery, is one and one thing only: the transcendent. Nothing which is limited, particularized, separate by itself, in the context of the little, in the context of the imprisoned, the context of the sundered from the whole, will ever bring fruition in terms of human life. It is only the transcendent which is the balm for any and every pain and sorrow, which is the solution, let me put it in a better way, which brings about the resolution into harmony of any and every problem, confusion. Think in this connection of what all the great religions have taught. They have put it, in some cases, in metaphysical terms. In Hindu teachings, for instance, we find the great statement, Mula Prakruti and Parabrahman are an identity. Primordial nature, Mula Prakruti, or the root of matter, if you like to use the word matter, and Parabrahman, absolute spirit, or ultimate reality, you translate it any way you like, whatever words we use will always be inadequate, but you just get the feel of it sensitively. They are an identity. There is no separation between them. They are one and the same thing. The separation is brought about by me due to my immaturity. Just as I raise up the duality of self and not self, I raise up the duality of matter and spirit, of body and mind. There is no duality in terms of the actual whole totality. No duality at all. It is my imperfections which make me mispicture the nature of reality. Mula Prakriti and Parabrahman are an identity. Now, sense this, really sense it, feel it immensely. Really immensely. Nirvana and samsara are an identity, as Mahayana put very unequivocally. They are an identity. Eckhart said, man is truly God. God is truly man. Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Now, the kingdom of heaven can't be a little place, you know, northwest of Arcadia or something like that. The kingdom of heaven implies the complete disappearance of limitation. There is no measurement here. There is only the infinite, the utterly unlimited, the totally free, in which there is no possibility of besmirchment by license. The totally free. The Buddha said, look within. Thou art Buddha. And what is the implication of thou art Buddha? What does Siddhartha Gautama, who became the Buddha, say of himself? And what did his great disciples like Kacchana and the others say of him? The Tathagata, he who has gone thus, that is the Buddha, is the Dhamma become. He has become the truth, the law, the absolute reality. He is the Brahma become. So you won't find him anywhere. He is without trace. Where will you go to find him? You who have become the truth, become the whole reality, are omnipresent. There is no possibility of confusion in your mind. You are omniscient. Not omniscient in the sense of a super encyclopedia, but omniscient in the sense that your mind is so pure and clear that you see the truth of things. You see? Surely, when we really see this, not just emotionally thrilled to it, but sensitively, wholly, feel it out, we become that truth, don't we? And what an extraordinary destiny is man's destiny, therefore. Now, in that state, there is no such thing as my problem or my pain. Problems and pains come in the world, in the psychical, in the mental realm, just as cloudy weather and sunny weather comes in the physical world. But he who is balanced, he who is a mature person, doesn't need to ring up his psychiatry and run off for his psychiatrist and run off for a treatment because he's become so depressed with the cloudy weather. Isn't that so? You just take it in your stride as a mature person. We wanted to play cricket today, but the rain came down in torrents. All right. The rain came down in torrents, so we did not play today. We'll play another day. And you arrive at the other day as you take your strides through life. In your stride. Now the same thing happens in the realm of the mind. We take it in our stride. And in the realm of the mind, unlike the physical realm, this is where the physical and mental are different in nature and function from each other. Where the realm of the mind is concerned, any one stride takes you through the entire realm of mind. Because the mind, the psyche, functions as a whole all the time, as a totality. The psyche has no separate organs like the body has a liver and a heart and a kidney and whatnot. The whole psyche is in the state of confusion or of depression or of elation or of a sublime exaltation or whatever it is. The whole psyche is like that. You watch it carefully. When this which is the transcendent answer has become a reality for us, is wholly meaningful to us, then we don't need to worry anybody with our problems. We will need to go to other people to obtain the benefit of their skills and their know-hows in all those aspects of life which are particularized aspects. If you want to learn chemistry, well, of course, you have to go to a place where there is a teacher of chemistry, there is a laboratory, there are the chemicals available, and you learn your chemistry, true enough. If you want to learn how to play golf, well, you learn that, you go to somebody who is a very good golfer, and you learn how to do it. If you go to a bad teacher, or a teacher who is, I don't mean bad, in the sense that he is deliberately deceitful, but he just doesn't happen to know very much. He can't teach you very much. And actually, he may put you on the wrong track because of his own ignorance. Then you have to give him up and go to somebody else. That is perfectly obvious. But where this inward life of the human being, our existence as humans, as souls, if you like to use the old-fashioned word, where that is concerned, there is nobody to go to. If we go to somebody, what do? We exchange information regarding our experience and our ideas. But usually, and unfortunately, we take the ideas as the truth. The ideas are only the wrapping for that vital, throbbing energy, indefinable, unnameable, which is the truth, and which is in you, in everything, in the whole universe, all the time. When I was born, and I believe when each and every one of you came into being at birth, you didn't have to go to anybody whatsoever to learn how to suckle at your mother's breast. You were hungry and you suckle. That's it. Just naturally. When the life of the soul, the life of the spirit, gets to this stage of naturalness, then the transcendent answer is everlastingly present with us for any and every problem. So now, when we really see that, we get free of this very unhappy situation where we wish our life were easy and free of difficulties and free of problems, and I wish such and such things wouldn't happen. They are such a nuisance, so they are so unnecessary and all the rest of it. True, if you like, in the limited context. Yes, they are a nuisance. But if it is the wholeness of life with which we are concerned, then no. We just take the whole lot in our stride. Because we have to, in any case, ultimately. There is no option to that. And then, what happens? If the element of my problem, my pain, is out of my consciousness, I am aware of pain. This is the world sorrow, the Weltschmerz. This is the world sorrow. It is there. Now I can be a light in the darkness. Because I will have gone right past the littleness, the ignorance, which makes me think in terms of, oh, we must change this politically, that economically, this socially, this educationally, and all the rest of it, in order to solve the problem. Of course I will do this politically and that economically and so forth, but I will now do it in the light of the totality. This is the world situation, the world problem. One remains balanced. One has no vested interests. The absence of vested interests is one of the real signposts to indicate that one is free from this duality of self and not self. So it doesn't mean that the perfected Holy One will run away from the unhappy realities of the life of the world, politically, socially, or any other way. If he has gifts that way, in the political sphere, right, he could contribute there. And he will be wise enough to contribute only where it is necessary, it is called for, and he is the one person who can just contribute that. And that's that. Or it may be in the social sphere. in the educational sphere, philanthropy, healing, nursing, anywhere. But he does it in the light of transcendence. Because he does it in the light of transcendence, it truly heals. There is nothing which goes out from him which is a destructive, a binding, or an evil element. Haven't we seen that the great world teachers were all doctors, doctor in the sense of teacher, and also they were doctors, that is, healers of the mind, fundamentally. The healing of the mind meant that this basic duality was truly out of consciousness. Consciousness was no longer just discriminative in the sense of separating oneself from anything else. So this is something which we must really wake up to, that the answer to all pain, to all problems, the real answer is only the transcendent answer. And the transcendent answer can never be limited. It includes everything. It energizes every particular aspect of the manifestation of the transcendent answer, that is, in the field, educational, political, or whatever it is. And this is something which means that the person truly lives the holy life. He lives the whole life. And one last point, which always needs emphasizing, the practical basis of it all, the indispensable basis, is the simple moralities. In thought and feeling, in word and in physical action, harmlessness, truthfulness, the utter absence of self-indulgence, of self-centeredness, and all the rest of it. You know them all. Now we have to be watchful and mindful and live them. And insofar they are lived, this light of transcendence shines through the human being who lives them and heals the world's sorrow.